All right. Good afternoon, everyone, and maybe evening, maybe morning, wherever you are. It's a podcast. Who knows where you are in your life or what it is that you're doing? All I know is that I am sitting here with a lovely individual named Matt Mills, who I've known for, what, 2 years now, 3 years?
I think we're coming on three. Yeah.
3 years or something? Yeah. Matt's been a fantastic educator into kind of my introduction into the lifestyle. I came in as a single guy and really had no idea what I was doing. And I attended one of your Men of the Lifestyle of seminar things. And that was a while ago. That was a long time
that
ago.
That was, yeah. That's right.
I was just a rookie at that time. And, you know, you've always been kind. You've always been very inviting and welcoming. Answering any questions that I've had, any questions that a lot of men have, and
single guys especially, right? Trying to get in, and
it's not the funnest time for single guys, but you know, if you can prove that you're a cool dude, it's a pretty sweet life.
Yeah, reputation's everything, right?
So yeah, we're just sitting here. Matt had some interesting things to tell me about his situation, things that are happening with him in the city that he lives in, some discrimination that you've been facing recently. I always want to kind of give you the opportunity as like a platform to just talk about yourself, you know, who you are, what your company, what you're trying to achieve with it, and like kind of the challenges that you face. So I guess we'll just start with the obvious first question you're the owner of a company called Menaj.
Yes, but it's not a company, and that's actually it's probably if we're going to be talking about what this whole issue is with the city, that's been one of the linchpins about it.
Right,
they're insisting that this is a business, and it's really not. It's essentially a way for me to bring together a bunch of people who are both my community and people who really want to explore their fantasies and some other aspects of the lifestyle that they've maybe heard of, or people looking to break in and see what it's all about, and do it in a maybe a more intimate, quieter way than, you know, maybe a little less intimidating than going to a club, you know. And so I converted a portion of my house, made it a little more party friendly. And we've been doing it like that since. But it was never an incorporated business. It was never intended to run as a, you know, kind of a for-profit thing. I always figured, you know, if I can cover expenses, that's good. And really, at the end of the day, I always told people, I'm going to have a party anyway. So, you know, I mean, I'm going to be down there playing this Saturday night. So if whoever wants to come can come. And that's kind of been the driving attitude to it. So, yeah, but Menaj means... means household in French, and that's really been the driving force of it, is just create a larger household, really.
Mm. Yeah. So you basically kind of just started this out as being like a social club, almost like a get together group, no different than playing bridge, I guess.
Fun bridge.
Naked bridge that everybody understands.
Let's play strip bridge. Yeah, it really, you know, before Menaj started, I mean, I've been in that house now since 2010. And it initially was just sort of informal house parties. And then by 2014, I figured, you know, I want to class it up a bit more, and I want to reach more people too. So that's when I launched a website, sort of more formalized it. Into something that could draw people outside of my immediate circle of friends. And I figured, you know, if we can get, what did I call it? First degree of separation, you know, they may not be my friends, but they're friends of my friends, and get those people interested. Then, and it also gave a website, gave a venue to answer some questions and give people an opportunity to kind of see, you know, what different things were about, because, you know, a lot of clubs are, they're sort of a typical dance club, and you know, play space is separate from that, and the whole deal. And house parties are they're more private, and they're more, so you know, you need to know somebody to get invited, and that kind of deal. So I wanted to create something that was in between those two. You know, you didn't need to go to a dance party, but you also didn't necessarily need to know the host firsthand and, you know, be one of 12 people on the guest list that night. You can maybe just Google it, find me, ask some questions, and then come to the next party. So I don't host them every weekend. There are a lot of people that come for private stuff most weekends, but I'm only hosting a party once, maybe twice a month. So, yeah.
So you've had the house since 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And how long have you, like, when did you decide to start doing things and, you know?
Yeah, that was 2014. They went through to late 2015 without a hitch. And, you know, I made a mistake early in those days. I tell people these days, I made a mistake back in those days because one of the first questions people want to know when they get there, because they don't hear any music, they don't see anything, they just follow the lights and get to the door. Now, of course, you've got the address and everything when you register, but you don't know what's going on until you actually get in there. And so when people walk in, their first question is, don't your neighbors, like, what do your neighbors say? And the mistake I made early in those days was, nah, they don't know anything. They're fine, and they're all keeping to themselves and doing their own thing. And nobody's ever approached me anyway and even made a comment and said, wow, you sure had a party last night or anything like that. So my response at that time was, they don't know anything, and what they don't know isn't any of their business anyway. Mm-hmm. And then you fast forward a little bit, and I find out they did know, and they had a real problem with it. So that was a bit of an eye-opener for me, yeah. So I, you know, my response changed to, they do know, and there's probably some good follow-up and education in that, in the sense that maybe what was happening when they figured, oh, the neighbors don't know and nobody's being disturbed, is maybe, you know, something simple like talking as loud as, you know, you would in the club. You keep that level up when you're walking back to your car. Maybe it's going to disturb somebody. We're in a residential neighborhood, right?
Right.
So it gave me kind of a follow-up opportunity to educate people and say, look, you know, I mean, yeah, they do know, and, you know, they're all judgy motherfuckers. So let's not give them a reason to judge us even more. So, yeah, just don't disturb the neighborhood and respect the neighbors and that kind of deal. So that was a bit more of an educational, you know, kind of follow-up for it. But it was an eye-opener for me, for sure, because when I found out that they do know, that's when I started having issues. So,
right.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about, like, these issues, because, I mean, I've seen your site, I've seen, you know, everything that you talk about on your site is, it looks like you cover all the legal bases. You know, you talk about consent, you talk about legal age, you talk about drugs and alcohol, you're very covered in that. Like, it seems like the safety of the people that come to your house is very, very important to you.
Mm-hmm. It is.
So, you know, was there some sort of catalyst there that made the neighbors kind of turn, or was it
like... There was. It was a sign that I put out for couriers. And I'll tell you how I found all this out. It was through a Freedom of Information request with the city. So I got a lot of information out of that. The initial one way back. So yeah, the catalyst was essentially a sign that I had put out for couriers. I was working in the back and didn't want to miss a courier delivery. So I put a little note out, said, come on around back and I'll sign for what you've got. And one of the neighbors saw it. Now, obviously their interest had been piqued prior to that. So I'm tracing it back to kind of around Halloween 2015. There were those parties were busy and they were back to back. We did a Friday night and a Saturday night, and then 2 weeks later was Taboo, and we were the official after party for Taboo. So Playboy couple came and hosted for the night, and we had a lot of fun. But they arrived in a limo, and you know, it just drew a fair bit of attention, right? Mm-hmm. So probably what happened was, you know, one of the neighbors was wondering what was going on and why, you know. Why so many parties? But anyway, they what I found was that they saw a sign. The sign said, if you've got a delivery for Minaj, come on around back. And so they Googled the name, found the website, and that's it. Hadn't, now remember, this is now 2015, late 2015.
Right.
I'd been having parties there since 2010.
Right.
And all of a sudden, it's an issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
it's an issue because now they know what kind of parties I'm having. If I'd been having barbecues and bridge parties and, you know, that kind of thing, it wouldn't have been a problem. But the emails that they were sending to the city were things like, we don't need his kind in our neighborhood, or any family neighborhood for that matter.
Right.
You know, that sort of thing. And it piqued my curiosity as to, or piqued my interest as to how motivated they were to do this, because my world was pretty much either lifestyle or lifestyle aware people who accepted. They may not be part of it, they may not get it, but they at least accept me for who I am, and you know, and they just kind of let me do my thing. Mm-hmm. And I figured that the people outside that, the people who really didn't accept us, were for the most part a live and let live type of attitude. And that's where I started to realize I was wrong. The third circle in the ripple of the pool is not a live and let live people. It's a judgy, moralistic, Puritan. It was crazy. It was really, really crazy. So yeah.
So this is like, I mean, essentially it seems like it's just an outright act of discrimination.
It is. Yeah. I mean, essentially, yeah.
This would be my opinion, is that it would be discrimination against your sexuality. Mm-hmm. Because if you were having a, let's say you were just having a regular BDSM party.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no one really talks about it. No one has to talk about it. It's your sexuality. It's your own personal stuff. Like,
that's right.
You know, if there's a couple that likes jumping up and down on breaking balloons, someone thinks that's weird, but I fight for that person's right to do what they want in the privacy of their own home, so provided they don't hurt anybody.
Yeah.
So what was the, I mean, it was, if you have a lot, you had a lot of neighbors right into the city.
I had a few. So yeah, if we kind of jump ahead a little bit, then that, there were eight. Yeah, so there were eight neighbors who wrote in recently. So this story, I guess, has two chunks to it, in that 2015 into 2016 period.
Well, why don't we get there later, and you can just tell me, tell me the in between times.
Oh, sure. Okay.
So now so we're up to this point. We've gotten to, you put a sign out. You think one of your neighbors saw it, and this is where the kind of the hubbub happens.
Yep.
So, but you're not stopping parties.
I'm not. I didn't even know there was an issue at that time. So I get a letter early 2016 from the city basically saying, you're running a business without a license, you need to stop. And you need to get all, you know, if you want to continue, you need to get all these different licenses. And they had looked at the website and they had, you know, kind of based it on what the neighbor had told them. And they decided that I needed things like a hotel license, like a restaurant and bar license, et cetera, because, I mean, I serve appetizers to guests, you know, at midnight kind of thing. So all these things were simply not achievable. But I had also done some work, you know, early on, like you said. I mean, I had developed some legal protections, I guess. And so I went to a lawyer and I said, look, what is this? I mean, you know, there's no reason for me to be, if I want to have a party in my house, I can have a party in my house, you know? And the lawyer said, yeah, no worries. I'll take care of it. So back and forth for 8 months, and eventually the city said, no, you're right. There's nothing here that requires a business license. Carry on. And essentially, you know, as long as you're not violating, you know, things like noise bylaws and parking bylaws, the things that everybody, you know, has to maintain respect for, then there's no issues. So that was late 2016 at that point. And it went away. Right, I'm carrying on business as usual and carrying on, you know, having parties and everything's normal. And then I think I did a FOIP. Yeah, so I did a FOIP back then because I wanted to see what was the issue. So I did this Freedom of Information request and I think I got, I don't know, 25, 35 pages, something like that, back on me. History of, you know, how they came to the conclusion and all this kind of deal. Essentially, my lawyer came back to me and between him and the Freedom of Information request, the FOIP thing, I found that the city basically just sent me a form letter. It's what they do for any complaint, and you're expected to comply, and if you don't comply, then they look into it, and that's what happened in my case. They look into it and say, "Oh, okay, it's not actually a business. You can throw that in the trash." And then what I found after that was that the neighbor complaints had continued. Now these are just two or three neighbors that haven't have an issue with me, but the neighbor complaints continued, and so this became a greasy, what's the saying, a squeaky wheel gets the grease,
right?
Yeah, that's essentially what it was. Mm-hmm. So the city reopened, had another look at it, and now this is into, I don't know, 2017 2018. I'm carrying on, I'm having my parties, and I'm, you know, doing whatever. And then I get another letter in early 2019. So this is early 2019. Telling me that they've done an investigation and they've determined that I'm running a social organization out of my house. And that is contrary to the land use bylaw. Not a business licensing issue, it's a land use issue. So fine and dandy. But part of what they did in this letter is they obviously gave me the definition of what a social organization is. And a social organization, I may get a few words wrong, but essentially the definition is any group of people who meets for any social, recreational, sporting, or entertainment purpose. That's it. There's no mention of frequency. There's no mention of whether that has to be done for a business purpose. There's no mention of how big a group it has to be. There's no mention of any of those sorts of things. It's just any sporting, cultural, entertainment, or social purpose. So that includes, like you said, bridge parties, Game of Thrones parties every Sunday, Grey Cup parties once a year, you know, any of these things.
So if my kids wanted to play street hockey once a week, that's a street hockey social organization?
Well, it might be mixing metaphors a little bit, only because now that's outside your house, right?
Oh, okay, right.
So now you've got stuff going on in the neighborhood. There's nothing in my place that you can even see from the outside. So, but certainly, yeah, I mean, the good examples would be Bible study club, for example.
Bible study,
right?
Yeah.
You know, you want to get a bunch of people over every Sunday after church and you want to have a little Bible study. That's great. Technically, that would be a social organization by this definition. So I had a problem with that. You know, city bylaws don't get to trump the Charter of Rights. And so first issue was, I thought this issue had been put to bed ages ago.
Right.
So one of the first things I did is go back and file another request for freedom of information. And this time I got 565 pages back.
This is the
city's file on me, right?
You're on their radar.
Yeah.
You're on their radar big time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now we're talking, what was this? Yeah, this was early 2019 when this started to happen. So I read through this 565 pages. It took me a day and a half. And I was enthralled. I couldn't believe it, you know. And really what it did was it highlighted several amazing things to me. I was astounded. There was a sort of a subplot in there of interdepartment communications actively looking for ways to quote unquote get me, you know, like literally having meetings to go, well, this doesn't work and that doesn't work, and he doesn't need a business license, so what else can we use to get him,
right?
You know, there were several emails that said things like, let's discuss this further, pop by my office and we'll have a chat. You know, they wanted to take it off record. There was one instance of a city department saying, "What? How did they place it?" They basically said that we're going to have a meeting and we're going to bring together a whole bunch of different departments and we're going to brainstorm a strategy on how to do this, on how to get me, essentially. And
sorry, just to interject, this is all public record.
This is all public record.
This
yeah.
is all. This is yeah. all. This yeah. is all documented.
This is all in my FOIP. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, it was just astounding to me. It really was. There were, you know, the neighbors would email in and say, Matt's having another party. You know, what are you going to do about it? And they would come back to this. There was one instance where in one of my previous VoIPs from 2016, some of my wording had been something like, I want to see all the information on any active investigations you have on me. And now in 2019, when I file another VoIP, I get the backstory on that. And it turns out that there are people in the VoIP department who then go through this record and they send their requests out to all the affected people. And so the VoIP department sent this to one city individual and said, you got to send us all your records. And he said, well, I've got an active investigation, but I don't want to release the records because I have a concern for my officer safety. And now this isn't a police thing. I want to stress that too. This isn't a police thing. This isn't a criminal thing. This is just some city department guy who has peace officers. I mean, they are legitimate peace officers, so I don't want to dispute that. But he says internally, he says, I've got a concern for my officer safety. Doesn't say what that concern is. Doesn't really, I mean, there's no other supporting documentation in the VoIP to indicate that there was actually a problem. But she says, doesn't matter, you've got to release it. So he said, all right, well, I'm gonna close the investigation then. Because remember, I had asked for information on active investigations. Mm-hmm. So he said, well, I'm gonna close the investigation then. You can have the prior records, but I'm gonna close this so it doesn't fit the definition anymore. And she said, that's fine, send me what you've got. So looking back, I mean, this was all from 2016, but I didn't get it in the original VoIP because of the way I'd worded it, right? So now in 2019, I'm getting all this stuff, all the blanks filled in, that essentially what happened back in 2016 is they said, you got no more issues, you don't need a business license. And then they went ahead and reinvestigated, essentially, kept continuing to keep a file on me.
Before you go any further, like what was the basis for the investigation? I mean, was there, you know, have you had cops come by the house with noise complaints?
I'm glad you asked.
Have you had like, did you get a letter from the city saying you need to keep it down?
Nope.
Or your parking issues?
Nope.
Or there, so,
nope.
So you've never had, just
I
on
have,
record, you
yeah,
never
right.
police, you never had a police officer come to your home and
nope.
say things are too loud, you need to keep it down.
Nope.
You never had somebody come to your any kind of documentation
nope.
from the police or
nope.
the city saying, you know, parking bylaws are
nope.
being violated.
As far as I know, none of my guests have ever, you know, messaged me the next day and said, hey, I got a parking ticket while I was at your house last night, you know, and nothing. There's never been a single parking ticket. There's never been a noise complaint. Because remember, I'm getting these VoIPs and I can see all the 311s that come in on my address.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's ever called in and said, there's a party going on and the noise is keeping me up, you know, any of those,
right.
these kinds of things. It's all essentially based on Matt's having another party. We know he's having another. One of the quotes from the neighbor was, he's not too bright. We know he's having a party when he turns his lights on. Like, you know? So yeah, it is entirely, when you read the wording through it, it's entirely. Now, again, the city is essentially just figuring out what they have in their arsenal to deal with it. They're not coming back to the neighbors and with any kind of moralistic condemnation. They're not going on record and saying, yeah, I think this is disgusting too, and
right.
I'll help you get them, you know.
Right.
I don't imagine any of them are that stupid, right? But that's what's on record. I don't know what happened in the meetings. I've requested meeting minutes and call logs and all this kind of thing as well. But so, yeah, I mean, it really is a... It's just a moral fight, really, is what it boils down to. So when I got this second letter, those are my only communications with the city, is very much after the fact, first in 2016, and then in 2019. It's basically, we've done all this stuff. We haven't asked you anything. We didn't ask you a question. We haven't, you know, we don't care what your opinion is. We've done an investigation, and we've determined that you're running a social organization, and you need to stop. So...
And all that information is just based off of your website.
Off of the website and I mean, the investigation at that point then. So this was where I mentioned they had this meeting, summer of 2018. They got people from, I believe, 8, it might be 8 different departments together. I mean, we're talking a lot of people.
This is a big deal.
This is the thing.
A big deal to the city.
It's crazy. I've identified, I think I'm up to about 16 different people in 8 or 9 different city departments, including the alderman's office.
Wow.
Who have touched this file and had an opinion on it and trying to move it one direction or the other, that kind of thing. So yeah, I mean, there's resources put into this.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a complete waste of time. It really is. It's you know, so they put together this meeting, and it had a PowerPoint presentation, and it had all kinds of stuff, which, you know, I've got access to all that now. It's all public record. And they determined that the best course of action was social organizations. So this is kind of like having a science experiment and creating the experiment to fit your conclusion. They've decided I'm a social organization, or the only way they're going to get me is a social organization. So what can we do to get the evidence that would back that up? So that's when the investigation kind of kicked into its stage, final stage. There are emails from the city, basically to these complaining neighbors, basically recruiting them to monitor and report back on my everyday activities. One of the neighbors reported and said, "I thought you'd like to know something interesting that happened last week at the Mills House," and it was almost dramatically typed. He said, it was written in such a way that they had a bunch of baby stuff delivered, crib and stroller and this kind of thing, and now this was back at a time when my ex was living at the house and her son had had a kid, and the baby was going to stay over every once in a while. And rather than humping stuff back and forth all the time, there was a crib there. There was all this stuff, right? The neighbor happened to see that stuff get delivered that day and decided that it was important enough to report that to the city. So they reported it in such a way that made it sound nefarious. You know, he said, "I thought you'd like to know something that happened interesting last week. All this baby stuff was delivered. There was a crib, there was a stroller, all these bags of baby toys. There are no babies living there." Like, period, dun, 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 you know, kind of thing. And I just, when I read this in the FOIP, I'm just thinking, like, as a normal neighbor, wouldn't you approach and go, "Hey, are you having a baby? Are you, like, what's going on?" You know?
Right.
Or an even better idea is mind your own fucking business. You know, really. That's kind of what it boils down to, you know?
And I mean, you've never been, you know, you've never been charged with anything.
No.
Yeah.
No, there's never, like I said, there's never been a peace officer come by and say, "Hey, you had a hell of a party last night, didn't you? You know, you want to keep it down," or any of those sorts of things. Nothing. Because again, you can't hear the music. You can't hear anything until you actually get to the door and come in.
Another question I have for you is, has there been any neighbors, and obviously not naming anyone, but has there been any neighbors who've had a positive response to what you do, you know, who've asked if they can come to one of your parties? Like,
there are people within walking distance who've attended Menage for sure, but you know, not everybody can stick their neck out and be public.
Absolutely,
and
yeah.
Everything else, right? So
which is kind of ridiculous, because it's a free country and you're allowed to practice whatever you want to practice, so long as you don't
absolutely
infringe on someone else's rights, which the city is obviously, from what you're telling me, they can't prove that you've done any of that.
Yeah.
So what's the next step for you in all of this?
The next step is, it laid out from this 2019 letter when I did the FOIP and everything else, and I just the next step for that, because it was a land use issue, is that if I wanted to appeal this decision, I had to go to a quasi-judicial body called the Subdivision and Development Appeal Board in Calgary. The acronym is the SDAB. And they handle all of the rezoning and redevelopment applications and all this kind of deal. Now, they're quasi-judicial. They don't question evidence that they receive. They just look at what they've got and they make a decision on it. They're not there to make case law. They're not there to rule on laws. They're just there to look at the complaint and say, "Well, yeah, there's a bylaw here and it looks like you're in contravention of it, so you got to stop," you know. The problem I have with even the process is that I'm not the way the bylaw is written. Obviously, like I said, I've got a charter issue with it. There are several charter issues with it, and so when I went to the SDAB to file the appeal, I basically had to say, I recognize that you don't have jurisdiction here, so you need to put your thing on hold until we determine in a court of competent jurisdiction whether this bylaw is even legally enforceable. And so everything got put on hold, essentially. So the SDAB thing is still pending, the outcome of a Court of Queen's Bench hearing, hopefully in January, to determine the constitutionality of the bylaw, basically. Like, the risk to the city here is that they get a portion of their land use bylaw struck down, which has never happened before. And the reasoning for it, it'll be interesting. I mean, again, you don't know what's going to happen in court, but I can't believe that in any decent court that they won't look at that bylaw and say, you simply can't tell people what they can and can't do or who they can have in their house or any of these things in a private residence. Yeah.
So, and on the flip side of this whole thing too is, I mean, this is going to be in court. So these people, not necessarily your neighbors, but the city, the city governance that's heading up this campaign is going to have to stand in front of a judge and explain why they're doing what it is that they're doing.
Yep.
So that's going to be an interesting day for you. I mean, you just get to basically sit back and enjoy.
No, there's been no enjoyment in this process, I'll tell you.
I imagine it sounds like you spent quite a bit of money and dealt with like what seems to be quite a bit of harassment because you're, you know, running everything as morally as you see fit.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing going on outside the house that affects anybody else. So, you know, whatever you might think of Trudeau Senior way back in the, I don't know, in the 70s or early 80s when he'd said the government has no business in the bedrooms of the nation, that's essentially what we're dealing with here. You know, the bylaw may very well have been written when they conceived of commercial spaces. You know, they don't want you running a social organization in a grocery store at night. But at the end of the day, who cares? But really, when you separate out commercial spaces from residential spaces, there's a great deal. And I think what I've taken away from this is that there are a lot of bylaws here, in Calgary and in other jurisdictions, where they write the bylaws and then just assume that you'll comply. They didn't actually check to see if there are any charter questions, if this infringes on anybody's rights, et cetera. I mean, granted, you know, there's always that overriding thing in the charter that says, yeah, I might have a freedom of religion or some other freedom infringed on, but section one in the charter says that is allowed, that infringement is allowed by the state if the state can prove that there's a greater good served by it. In this case, there is no way they're going to be able to pass that test. How the greater good could trump, you know, me having a bunch of people over at my house for activities that let's face it, they don't know what's going on, right? And the risk here, this is the reason that I'm even backed into this corner, is because had I received this letter and said, oh wow, the city thinks I'm running a social organization, they want me to stop, and if I don't stop, they're going to fine me $10,000 every time this happens. That's the sanction that they could put on this. And I could simply say, okay, wow, I'm just going to stop. But based on everything I've seen, the neighbors really don't like what's going on. And they judge everything from somebody pulling up and spending 2 hours at my place in an afternoon to me having five cars parked out front on a Saturday night. So if I was to have, you know, people over for a barbecue, let's say I stop. I never have another naked party ever in my life, but I have a bunch of people over for a barbecue and we cook a bunch of burgers and we come in the house and we eat and we have a good time, and the very next day I get a letter fining me $10,000 because I've had people over at my house. I mean, how ridiculous does that sound? Yeah. You know, so I almost don't have any other course of action at this point, because if I acquiesce, then I'm essentially acknowledging that I'm not going to have anybody over at my house again. And now the onus becomes on me to prove what? That I was only having burgers? What if I was having burgers with people who are lifestyle-oriented or ethically non-monogamous? We didn't actually party. We didn't get naked. But I've got a lot of friends like that. We've never played, but they're really good people. And they just happen to be part of an ethically non-monogamous community.
I think if it was, you know, because of just basically where maybe we are in the non-monogamy world and like kind of in the middle of this whole relationship revolution.
Mm, yeah.
Right? Where people, you know, people are turning to polyamory, they're turning to non-monogamy, they're turning to just not being in any relationships at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you were to replace everything with, let's say you were gay,
mm-hmm.
and you were having, you know, other gay people over.
Absolutely.
And your neighbors were treating you this way.
Yep.
It would be completely, completely discriminatory.
Sure, you bet.
Completely discriminatory,
yeah.
Right?
And it's not, let's face it, it's not politically correct or socially acceptable anymore to beat up on a gay couple at the end of the block.
Right.
So, yeah, you've got the non-monogamous crowd now.
But if the, well, I would say, if the majority said it was okay,
yeah.
then they would.
Sure. And that was, I would say that was what, the 1960s, 1970s? I don't know my...
80s, 90s.
Well, 80s, 90s even. Yeah,
Ellen,
for sure.
Ellen
yeah.
came
yeah.
out in like 95.
Yeah,
she got
true.
Fired the next day, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So yeah. I mean, it really is about changing social perspectives. And I think that's where this thing blindsided me a bit is that, like I said, I was living in this bubble that, you know, people, even my family knows who I am. And I really do view this as a sexual orientation. This is an orientation. This isn't just something I do for fun on Saturday nights. This is the way I'm wired,
yeah.
and this is the way a lot of people are wired. I think the last article I saw cited some studies that said 20% of the population, at least in the U.S., it was American, had practiced some form of non-monogamy at some point, ethical non-monogamy. They were making this distinction. I mean, it's a like you say, it's a relationship revolution. You know,
can you just kind of touch on that just a little bit on what is ethical non-monogamy?
Well, it's a blanket term. That I think makes a distinction between, like, non-monogamy is obviously just different than monogamy. Non-monogamy could cover everything from cheating
yeah.
to commune living, really, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, anybody that maintains, I mean, I don't want to put a definition on it for everybody else, but, you know, I mean, if you have an ethical, I don't think you need to be in a relationship to be ethically non-monogamous. There's a term that I've really identified strongly with called solo poly. People who value a lot of independence, they're still polyamorous. They can maintain relationships, intimate relationships, whether that's emotional, physical, whatever kind of intimacy. They can maintain that some level of intimacy in relationships with several people. And that to me is sort of maybe a catch-all for testing whether you are polyamorously minded, if that's a word. If you have a polyamorous leaning, then yeah, you're going to think that's acceptable. But in mainstream society, you're told that, you know, you settle down with one person and it's the white picket fence and you have kids and that's the end of it.
And if you want to cheat, you don't talk about
it. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. You know. So I mean, that's one end of the spectrum, and then there's this much larger chunk. Well, no, it's a smaller chunk. Let's face it, right? Statistically, 50% of monogamous married couples end up cheating, and so that's a large segment of the the non-monogamous spectrum. But if you've also got this smaller band of people that are saying, no, you know what, I want to start living more genuinely, and I want to start having these conversations with my partners, so that we can all come to some arrangement or conclusion as to what's acceptable to us. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, pretty much everybody that I get involved with on any level, whether it's, you know, a coffee date or anything else, everybody knows that I'm non-monogamous, and I'm not going to compromise that for anybody, really.
Well, I think it's very inspiring the way you stand up for yourself, the way you stand up for your own community. So obviously, I'm gonna post this podcast. I'll probably have it posted by tonight, and put it online and everything. And guaranteed, some of your neighbors are gonna want to listen to it. I mean, and if just in knowing that maybe your neighbors are listening to this, like what would you like your neighbors to know about you?
Yeah,
that they wouldn't know already, or this that they're judging you based off of. I mean, because let's face it, they're basically judging you based off of what they've seen of
your
website.
Yeah,
and that's it. Right?
And it was if you extrapolate that, I had good relations with my neighbors. I mean, you know, especially the ones on my street. You know, we all kind of knew each other. We waved, we'd talk to each other, whatever. And I think, and I don't want to disrespect my queer and gay and lesbian and all the other marginalized sexual orientations. I've got friends in all of those communities, and I don't want to disrespect them by belittling this point. So I want to be clear on that, because I feel a little bit like how they maybe felt, in the sense that now the outside world knows how I'm wired, and all of a sudden, my neighborhood had a barbecue last September. Everybody was invited except me. Oh. I didn't even know about it till afterwards. And I mean, my feelings aren't hurt by that. It's just, I say it because
mine
it's astounding. You know, no, I've seen a map of the neighborhood. It's like a block watch type of map, where everybody's contact information is on their parcel, right? So you've got this map and it shows everybody's lot, and it shows their names and their phone number and their email address, so everybody can communicate with everybody. And you know what's on my lot? Big white space. Nobody, there's no communication with me at all. And again, I don't say that because my feelings are hurt, but I say it because it goes to show how people can switch 180 degrees. You know, they find out one thing about you that doesn't fit their acceptability standards, and all of a sudden, you're no longer a human being, really. I mean, that's, you know, to make a drastic point about it. So, you know, what would I tell the neighbors? And this is after reading these letters. Remember, I read these eight letters that they had written to the SDAB in support of their cause, I guess. Only two of them actually live on my street. I think that's an important point to make. Only two of them are actually affected by the comings and goings at my house. All of the rest of them are simply in the community that I live in. Cars don't go past their houses. They even started some of their letters with things like, I've been made aware of the activities going on at Mills's house, and I find them totally reprehensible, and yada, 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 that sort of thing. So they're not directly involved. They didn't have an opinion until they were told what was going on, and now all of a sudden they got an opinion. So after reading things that they've written in those letters, like one of them said that he had a particular concern about people who stayed overnight at my place, because this means that people of questionable character will have a greater opportunity to meet neighborhood children when they leave my house in the daytime.
Wow, so now you're a danger to children.
They have all but said, I am a pedophile, a rapist, and an overall social degenerate.
Jesus Christ.
It's crazy. It really is. You know, one of them painted a picture that said that their teen, just prior, I don't remember the phrasing they used, older teen kids, girls, come home from working sometimes at night, and if they have to park farther away from their house, now they've got to walk down the street in the neighborhood. Now, again, this guy didn't live on my street, so he's not even coming in contact with anything, right? But his concern is now that these sexually charged, probably intoxicated, possibly high on drugs, people now have no outlet but to attack their daughters. Like, let it sink in for a second. Yeah. That is crazy, you know? It just, so So reading those letters, I will admit, I was hurt. I was the first few times I read the letters, I just kept reading them thinking, how can they even, like, these are people who, well, some of them who knew me.
Yeah. Making you out to be a monster.
Making me out to be some kind of social monster, right? But moreover than any kind of hurt feelings was this overall sense that I can't talk to these people. I can't educate them. They're not going to want to listen to anything I have to say. But what was sort of common to all those letters was there's a them and there's an us. Mm-hmm. Everybody who comes to my place is a certain kind of person, regardless of the fact that they are teachers and soccer coaches and priests and regular everyday people, you know,
whatever that means.
All of that. Yeah. I mean, you could be standing behind one in a grocery store line. Like they are, all of that logic went out the window. There's a them and there's an us, and us is degenerate, regardless of whether, you know, they coach your kids on Saturday mornings or whether they teach your kids in school. If they found that out, then that person would then no longer be suitable to teach their kids. By that one measure, obviously, I mean, based on these letters, right? So it really opened up my eyes that there is no talking to these people. They've made up their minds, and their minds are based on who knows what. So in answer to your question, I guess it's a long way to answer your question, but what I would say to them is remind them that these are just everyday people. I'm just an everyday person. Just everybody's regular. You know, we're not normal. I get it. We're not normative. Some of our social and our relationship practices are not normative, but in every other aspect, we just hold down jobs and we work and we play and we, like I said, we teach sports and we play sports, and we're just everyday people. And that's something that I think, not just in this very specific instance, but I think a lot of people could stand to remember in this day and age, you know, in every aspect. There's a lot of polarization going on. And this is really just my own little example of it.
Well, it's not a little one. You know?
Yeah, it's not a little, yeah. Yeah.
Well, Matt, thank you. Thank you so much for telling your story. Like I said, I think you've always been an amazing advocate within the lifestyle and within the ethical non-monogamy world. You've always made yourself available for open discussion and have been a great ally. And I would highly recommend anybody who's intrigued, whether you're monogamous or non-monogamous, whether you have strong feelings anti or for feelings about it, to check out what it is that you do and to reach out and ask questions.
I'm happy to answer
and discuss things with you, because I can tell you that you know, Matt's always been available to have a conversation. So I just want to thank you very much for telling your story, and
yeah, I appreciate it.
And
appreciate it.
I'll get this up so you can share it with everyone.
Thank you. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm very intrigued to see how things turn out with this whole situation. And then, you know,
yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Hopefully works out for you.
Yeah, I hope so too. And I don't know that the court date's going to be pushed out. It sort of looks like it might at this point, but you know, for now we're scheduled for the end of January, and then there's another SDAB hearing at the end of February to basically, you know, wipe everything clean. Assuming I win in court, then the SDAB would have to look at that court ruling and go, okay, we got no jurisdiction here, and pull the plug on it. But that said, it doesn't look like the city's going to go away. So my next steps are probably, who knows, Human Rights Commission. You know, I mean, something. Somebody obviously has a bone to pick.
You're prepared to play this right to the bone, though.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it becomes not just a principle. I mean, you know, I've got just over $50,000 sunk into this already, and I am going to be starting a GoFundMe in the new year to help allay some of these costs, but overall, it's not just a principle. There's a practical thing here. Like I said, I don't want to have to justify whether I have, you know, people over for a barbecue or people over for a party or what kind of party that is or any of these things, you know? it's nobody else's business but ours.
From what I know from the law, you really shouldn't have to.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Matt.
Thanks, man. Appreciate
awesome.
It.
Awesome. Yeah. This is a great conversation. Let's get together after things are set.
Yeah, and, I'll give you an update. Yeah.
And let's do a follow up on this. But I just want to thank my guest Matt Mills very much for showing up and telling his story. And
thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Awesome. All the best to you.
Take care. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, guys, it's been another episode of Rake and Dandy. If you'd like to subscribe to the channel, it's on Buzzsprout. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts and ideas on this or your questions. And also stay tuned for Friday night, this Friday night at 9 p.m. I'm going to have independent unicorn Kristen Bell on. She's going to be taking your questions as well. So once again, it's Rake and Dandy. Thanks so much for tuning in and for helping me become a little bit better every day.